New York City. Thousands now are dead. It was Arab terrorists. This is what you said. Well, if that is the truth, then what have you got to hide? What were you doing on the day all those people died? Where the fuck were the fighter jets ordered by the FAA? What is your explanation for what you were heard to say when you told the Air Force to stand down, not to intercept? Did you plan to let it happen, or are you just inept? There's some distressing information, sir, which I think should be explained. Just which things have been lost and just what has been gained. Like the thousands of put options bought days before the crash. If the money were collected, it'd make quite a pretty stash. And the only stocks they bought were American and United. Deutsche Bank knows the answer, but the names have not been cited. And is it just coincidence that this firm in the private sector was once run by Buzzy Krongard, now CIA director? I am left to wonder, as the flames are rising higher, was this our latest Lusitania, or another Reichstag fire?
And you are now listening to People Rise Up on your community radio station, KBOO. That's David Rovics with Reichstag Fire. A favorite for opening shows about 9/11. My name's Andrew Geller, and this will be the final People Rise Up radio program about 9/11 before the 9/11 Commission report is released. By this time tomorrow morning, Thursday, July 22nd, 2004, the final report of the Cain Commission, which feebly investigated the 9/11 attacks, will be available. Though historic in an official sense, its true significance will be more accurately revealed when you notice what it doesn't include. And though it's not really what I'm talking about, the redactions and blatant omissions among the documentation are galling. No, I'm referring to lines of questioning and even individual questions that, for whatever combination of reasons, the Cain Commission couldn't bring itself to ask its witnesses or even its own staff. They even interviewed certain individuals more than once under oath. Dozens of families who lost people in the attacks have refused the government settlement, instead retaining their right to legally challenge the cover-up being crafted around us. The Family Steering Committee has consistently engaged the Cain Commission and, in fact, forced its creation over Bush administration objections. The FSC has developed several impressive lists of questions for key officials regarding 9/11. Hundreds more could easily be asked. But every single FSC question should be answerable with proof, for starters. And that's what we're going to be talking about on People Rise Up here this morning, the questions and the answers that will not be in the 9/11 Commission report when it's available tomorrow morning. I'm privileged to have Emmanuel Sfirios, the co-founder and webmaster of the 9/11 Visibility Project and West Coast Regional Director of 911truth.org, on the phone to help us sort out some of the many, many aspects of what's not going to be in the report tomorrow. Good morning, Emmanuel.
Good morning, Andrew.
Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, we're not going to get anywhere close to talking about all the aspects of what's not going to be in the report tomorrow. So let's kind of focus on some really key glaring omissions. And I think it'd be safe to say that among the most glaring omissions, both in the questioning and what will likely be in the report, is the lack of investigation about all the war games that were going on the morning of September 11th. There's four different confirmed war games that took place. NORAD's acknowledged them. Other aspects of the government have acknowledged them. And yet, it didn't really make it into the questioning.
Yeah, that's very crucial. In fact, the war games really could shed a lot of light onto the unprecedented failure of our air defense systems on 9/11, and why, violating standard operating procedures, no jet interceptors were sent up to intercept these hijacked planes, when, in fact, this has happened over 67 times in the year prior to 9/11, just when a plane veers off course. But on 9/11, we knew they were not just veering off course, but they were hijacked, and there was no response, and no one has been reprimanded as a result of this. In fact, General Myers, the head of NORAD at the time, was promoted. So these are some of the questions that the family members have been wanting addressed. These war games, which could answer these questions, were published in numerous mainstream news sources, and yet the 9/11 Commission, which we like to refer to as the cover-up commission, has not asked these questions to witnesses on the stand that could have provided answers, so we don't anticipate that any of this will be in the report.
Well, and above and beyond not even discussing any of the war games, there were glaring contradictions, and without libeling anybody, it sure seems like there were some witnesses lying on the stand under oath during parts of those hearings.
Yeah, well, that's very clear, and a lot of that's proven if you kind of go through the testimony. Most definitely, and they indicate in some of their responses that they were confused as to whether the hijackings were part of the training exercises, the war games that were happening on that day, and there was no follow-up to those responses. I think most Americans would be shocked to learn that on 9/11, the National Reconnaissance Office and NORAD were undertaking war games simulating multiple hijackings that included live fly remote-controlled aircraft in the air, as well as fake radar blips inserted on NORAD screens. So when the, quote, actual hijackings took place, NORAD didn't know how to respond.
Well, or that's what they're saying.
Right.
So that's one of the absolute just most crucial things, and that's not going to get addressed in the official report, and has been addressed, as many of these other topics we'll talk about today, at the independent 9/11 inquiries that have happened in both San Francisco, Toronto, and if you want to count the one earlier in Germany.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of easily documentable evidence of many, many different things that they're not going to talk about. Another thing that really isn't talked about a whole lot is why there's never been really any satisfactory answer regarding what George W. Bush, Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld, and acting at the time Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Richard Myers were doing that morning, because all media accounts have them just kind of sitting around having meetings, just having their regular days, but being briefed somewhat about what was going on, which didn't elicit much in the way of reaction from them.
Right, and to his credit, Michael Moore had exposed that in Fahrenheit 9/11
mm-hmm.
with the video of Bush sitting there doing nothing after being informed not only that he'd already known that before he entered the classroom that the first tower was hit, but that the second tower was hit and that the country was under attack. And he just sits there as if he had already expected this, and you can imagine Karl Rove in the background holding up a sign saying, "Don't react yet,"
mm-hmm.
and the whole thing was a big charade. That's very crucial, and I think a lot of people were woken up when they saw that footage in Fahrenheit 9/11.
Well, and the final hearing of the 9/11 Commission last month, where they brought back some NORAD officials, including General Ralph E. Eberhard, who was in charge of NORAD on the morning of September 11th and has since been promoted to heading the Northern Command, as well as Captain Charles Leidig, who had the dubious honor of substituting for, I forget the guy's name that he took the shift of between basically 8:30 and 10:30 in the morning. But basically it was revealed that a guy who'd never done the job before, though he'd had training, was now in charge of NORAD's response facility, or actually the National Military Command Center at the Pentagon. And you know, there's so many just glaring loose ends and obvious questions, and at points the commission seemed to very intentionally or unintentionally come across something that could have been an embarrassing line of questioning, and a new commissioner would get the floor and veer completely away from it.
Right. Well, I think it's very clear that the commission itself is part of the cover-up, that pursuing these questions would lead to the conclusion that 9/11 was not an intelligence failure on the part of our intelligence services, but actually a great intelligence success, and mm-hmm. that there was deep-level complicity on the part of the administration and other agencies in the U.S. government. And for whatever reason, whether they've been threatened or whether they just simply serve power, you know, unconsciously, they are not willing to ask those questions that would expose that.
Well, and they're hardly independent. I mean, George W. Bush got to pick everybody on there after, you know, begrudgingly agreeing to have an investigation at all.
Right. The conflicts of interest among the 9/11 Commission members are great. You know, Zelikoff, for example, co-authored a book with Condoleezza Rice.
Mm-hmm.
That does not put him in a position to independently investigate the administration.
And you're referring to Philip Zelikow, who's the executive director of the 9/11 Commission. That's a staff position as opposed to a commissioner.
Right, okay.
I just wanted, for listeners who don't know who he is,
right.
You want to touch on a couple more kind of glaring conflicts of interest in the context of who's on the commission?
Well, you might know more than I do about that.
Well, I might, because what I'm looking at right now is the really fascinating Scamming America, the official 911 cover-up guide. This was published
Right, that was published by our New York group, mm-hmm. New York 911truth.org. And it's a great little book. It was distributed to everyone attending the last two commission hearings.
Yeah, and so the head of it, for example, Thomas Kane, he used to be director of Emirata Hess, which is a company that maintained a partnership with Delta Oil in Saudi Arabia. Unocal and Delta Oil in the 90s were negotiating deals with Central Asian governments looking to get pipeline rights in the area. So the head of the commissions involved in the pipelines that were theoretically the justification for the Afghan war by July of 2001. And the 9/11 attacks happened to fit a model put forth by, well, kind of the pre-Bush administration two folks, Cheney and Pearl and Wolfowitz and all those folks. The Project for a New American Century. So there's a blueprint these folks had. They get into power. They have the catalyzing event, which they referred to as a New Pearl Harbor type activity. And then they get to implement their plan.
Right. It's very crucial to understand that the war in Afghanistan was planned long before 9/11, because the Taliban, who was put into power by the CIA and money from Saudi Arabia and Pakistan, did not create the stability that the U.S. government had hoped to provide stability for the oil pipeline that they wanted to build in order to get the Caspian region oil to the west. And so when the Taliban couldn't pull through on that, they had plans to remove them from power for an invasion, but they needed a pretext to do that. And this, like you mentioned, is spelled out in the Project for New American Century March 2000 document, that they would need a catastrophic and catalyzing event like a New Pearl Harbor in order to achieve consensus domestically and internationally for this invasion. And of course, bin Laden, who has long been a CIA asset, and no reason to believe he's not still currently a important strategic asset for the CIA, he needed to be in Afghanistan to provide a justification for the U.S. to invade under, you know, the excuse of those who harbor the terrorists are just as bad as the terrorists themselves. And that goes back to some history when the U.S. could have apprehended bin Laden, but when he was in Yemen, I believe, the Yemen government had him knew exactly where he was, but the U.S. told him, no, just expel him to Afghanistan instead.
Well, and the Sudanese government, I believe, also let him pass through at some point. I want to let people know they're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO. My guest is Emmanuel Sfirios. He is the co-founder and webmaster of the 911 Visibility Project. And you can find them online at 911, those are the numerals, 911visibility.org. He's also the West Coast Regional Director of 911truth.org, and the name is also the URL there.
And if I could mention, 911visibility.org is the activist central online for the 9/11 truth movement. We've been talking a lot today about anomalies in the official story and some history, but mostly on 911visibility.org, people can find a way to plug into the movement. For example, there are contacts and 9/11 truth action groups listed for over 35 cities across the United States and even a few internationally. And every week we're adding a few more as the movement grows. Also a list of prominent endorsers of the 9/11 truth movement, the celebrities and others who are supporting the 9/11 families and want to see a real investigation happen and some of these questions answered. So for people who want to plug in and get involved, it's 911visibility.org.
And there is a Portland chapter. There's I think it's the third week just happened of teaching about the new Pearl Harbor, the book by David Ray Griffin, who we had on the Spring Pledge Drive here. That's taking place Tuesday nights at the Friends Meeting House, 43rd and Stark in Southeast at 7 p.m. And you can go at any point. So next Tuesday night, you could go there.
And also for those of you who have read the new Pearl Harbor by Dr. Griffin, David Ray Griffin is going to be speaking in Eugene coming up not too far from Portland. People might want to go to that because this is going to be his first and probably one of his few public speaking appearances. He only does radio shows because he's busy, but he, since his alma mater is in Eugene, he is heading up there for a talk, and that's going to be happening on Wednesday, the 28th. And
right.
For information on how to get tickets, which are cheap, only $5, your listeners can go to www.oilempire.us.
And important information I just got from the Oil Empire folks is that there's a location change for the David Ray Griffin talk. Oilempire.us will have the information. It's going to be at the Hilton Hotel Conference Center at 7th and Willamette in Eugene, not at the McDonald Theater. The time and date are the same, and you just have to go a few blocks one direction instead of the other.
And I do highly recommend your listeners to go to that event and to purchase a copy of the new Pearl Harbor and read it if they haven't already, because it is the best book currently written exposing the evidence for administration complicity in 9/11. Very well researched. Dr. Griffin is a theologian